This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We tape in the offices of Raider Solutions, located in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd also like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered in Lafayette with 325 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit iberiabank.com for more information. And lastly, thank you for the support of Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Jimmy Guidry is our guest today. Owner of the iconic Hub City Diner, Jimmy got his start in the hospitality business working for his mother at the Dairy Queen in Opelousas as a young boy. After working his way through college at USL by bartending at Uncle Pete's on General Mouton, he opened the Brass Rail in 1973. Jimmy got out of the bar business in 1981 and worked first for Beef and Ale as a manager and then Cuco's Mexican chain as a regional manager before he opened Hub City Diner in 1998. Jimmy was awarded Restaurateur of the Year by the Louisiana Restaurant Association's Acadiana chapter and has been named the Optimist Club Citizen of the Year. He serves on the board of Acadiana Animal Aid, as well as on the Lafayette Parish Animal Control Advisory Board. Exercise is important to Jimmy, and he is now an active kayaker after learning that injury may result from heavy weightlifting and running marathons. Jimmy Guidry, welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you very much, Jan. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am thrilled to have you here. You're probably one of the most positive and kind people in Lafayette, and I know that's why Hub City Diner has been so successful. And so today we can share your story so we can get to know you better.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, but we can probably start from the beginning.
So in the opening, I was mentioning that you got your start working for your mother in Opelousas. You want to share some of that?
Right. When I was 10, my mom bought a Dairy Queen, and she went from being a full-time housewife to a restaurateur overnight. And all of my brothers and I each had a job. Mm-hmm. And as the youngest, my job was to pick up the trash in the parking lot on my way to school. So I'd ride my bike to the Dairy Queen, pick up soggy ice cream in ice cream cones in February, and head on to school.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, my job titles changed, but also my level of responsibility. So by the time I was about 12, I was handling money. Mm-hmm. And it was very different than it is today, because today registers tell you how much change to give, but back then it was manual. So,
but we all learned how to count, and you know, we didn't have computerized registers, so we had to know how to do it.
Huh? But kids don't today.
Yeah, no, they don't. So tell me about the Dairy Queen. I'm trying to picture it. Was it like a stand, or could you go in? Was it a sit-down type of place?
This Dairy Queen was a standalone unit, and at that time, Dairy Queen didn't allow anything but ice cream to be sold on a Dairy Queen. So the previous owner had built a little snack shack in the back of the building that we sold hamburgers and hot dogs. And, mm-hmm. you know, back then you made your own root beer, you made your own ginger ale. You sliced your own pickles, you ground your own beef. Mm-hmm. So when I was 14, I started grinding beef, which probably OSHA wouldn't be very happy with.
I was thinking of child labor laws.
This would not be a good thing today.
Fingers, so, yeah, in the mix. Yeah.
Well, I'm very fortunate that I have all my
limbs.
You
have limbs. All 10, yeah, fingers.
And then as time went on, you know, the job just grew, and uh-huh. I realized that serving people was probably the area that I wanted to head in.
You know, I remember when I interviewed Charlie Goodson a while back, he said that in college, back probably when you were there, they didn't really have hospitality management and all that. Did you think you would go into the business you're in when you were heading into college?
Well, when I was in school, I was a marketing major. Okay. So I knew I wanted to be in business, but I didn't know what direction that mm-hmm. I was going to head into. And after college, I bartended my way through college mm-hmm. at Uncle Pete's. Along with Charlie Goodson, where we started bartending together mm-hmm. 50 years ago.
How fun.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, he's been a lifelong mm-hmm. buddy of mine, and we still share stories. So,
yeah.
And then after I graduated from college, I didn't want to get a real job, so I waited tables for a couple years at the Beef and Ale Steakhouse, mm-hmm. and then saw that it was time for me to move on, and that's when I opened up the Brass Rail.
Right. Talk about that. I remember the Brass Rail. I didn't live here when it opened. But.
We opened the Brass Rail in 1973. Rules were really different back then, mm-hmm. and there were no opening and closing laws, and my motto was first bar to open and the last bar to close, and we'd open at 9 a.m., and we would close whenever.
Yeah.
And we at
literally, right?
Like, literally, when the last person walked mm-hmm. out. You know, generally it was...
Or had to be thrown out, probably.
Generally it mm-hmm. was four-ish, mm-hmm. you know? So...
Wow.
Yeah.
And so I...
Things were just different.
Things were way different.
Yeah.
And after a couple of years of success at the Brass Rail, we opened up a bar that was actually catty corner from that called Mother's Mantle. And it was a live entertainment venue. We did live entertainment seven gigs a week.
Wow.
So 6 nights a week and on Friday afternoon. So we had a band that played, we had an outside patio, and we had a band that played outside on Friday afternoons from 2 to 6. And then the night gig would start at 7 o'clock.
You're saying we, did you have partners or
Well, I had friends.
Team?
Uh-huh.
They'd hang out with you. Huh?
Well, I had lots of buddies back then. And I did have partners while I was in the bar business.
Mm-hmm.
But they were silent partners. They didn't have anything to do with the operations.
So you were really overseeing?
I was the operator.
Oh, gosh, Jamie.
And then we opened a Brass Rail in Baton Rouge. And near campus, it was actually on Highland Road where it had to be exactly a mile from campus. So we were mm-hmm. 1.1 miles away from campus on Highland Road. And all of my bars served food also. So Then a couple years after that, we opened Antlers downtown.
Oh, okay.
We converted Antlers from being a older clientele pool hall joint to basically what it is mm-hmm. now, which is a restaurant, live entertainment interview, a venue. So
you were busy.
I was very busy.
Yeah.
And then we opened a Mother's Mantle in Baton Rouge. We had Boo Boo's Nightclub on the Broadbridge Highway, which was a 800-seat honky-tonk.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even realize all this.
That was only open on Friday and Saturday mm-hmm. night. And at that point, there were no closing ordinances. So we had TK Uland, which I'm yeah. sure you're familiar with. You know who he is? He's a swamp pomp kind of guy.
Okay. Yeah, I'm from the north, so
right.
yeah. So,
and then
I'm learning.
So he played every Friday night, and Johnny Allen, who's a swamp pop star, played every Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have 500 people show up for their entertainment, and then at 1:30 they'd get up and leave, and then we'd really get busy.
What year-ish are you talking
this
about?
This would have been probably 77
mm-hmm.
to...
So this all happened quickly. You
yeah,
accelerated your investments and
right.
your silent partners.
So I...
Gosh.
And then in 81, I realized that I didn't need to be in the bar business anymore. And sold my interest in one day mm-hmm. to one of my partners.
So you were still really young, but I mean, I can see just wearing yourself out with all that.
Well, it was very interesting because I had a pretty good routine. I'd get up around 10. I'd go work lunch at one of the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to the gym at 2, I'd work out with my buddies from 2 to 3:30, and
wow.
then I'd go home, take a nap, get up at 8 o'clock, go to work till the next morning.
So you had to be regimented to keep up.
Right, and I was working out hard back then.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. You told me that. I know that's why you kayak now, but... So you got out of the bar business, and I can only imagine you kind of got your life back in some ways, but then you were working... for a restaurant chain, Beef and Ale. So that's pretty demanding, too.
Right. Well, I worked with Beef and Ale, which I had waited tables there earlier mm-hmm. on. And it was great guys to work with, and I had been friends with them for years. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that if I wanted to be successful in the business, I needed to learn more than they knew.
Right.
So I knew the only way for me to do that was to go to work for a chain. So I was hired by Cuco's Mexican mm-hmm. Restaurants as a GM. I was a GM for like a year and a half, and then I got promoted to regional manager, and had about a 15-year run with these guys. Mm-hmm. And it was a awesome company. My boss was just the best guy in the whole mm-hmm. world, and he let me do what I needed to do.
So how do you, I've always been curious about the restaurant business, just even the purchasing and the planning. It just seems so complicated to me to learn how things work, cycles of how long food can be used and how not to waste and training, all the different things that go into making a successful restaurant.
With anything, if you break it down by its simplest component, it's very simple. So when I look at a complicated issue, I just mm-hmm. take it and I keep breaking the box up until I get down to mm-hmm. its basic component. And then the answer is very clear every time.
So the chain probably had their own.
Oh, it was very systematized.
Working rules, yeah.
It was very systematized. Mm-hmm. And the fortunate thing for me was I was working at the corporate level, and so I got to see everything and learn mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. And I negotiated the food contracts and did all of the purchasing. I did all the equipment purchasing. Uh-huh. I negotiated leases. I built buildings.
That was a great experience.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And they were paying me to do it. And I was having fun.
Right.
But it was time to move on. Mm-hmm. There was a time working for them. It was a very lonely job because I was the corporate, you know what?
You traveled?
I traveled extensively.
Yeah.
I was gone. Sometimes I'd stay out 3 or 4 months because I was single then. So I would just stay out. I'd mm-hmm. never come home.
And you were based in Monroe? Is that, or where did you end up when you were with Cuco's?
I was living in New Orleans.
In New Orleans
that's where the
corporate
office is.
Okay.
And I wanted to end up back in Lafayette.
Yeah, I know you said that. So in 1998, you had an opportunity to come back.
Right. Actually, I was having dinner with Charlie Goodson at Charlie G's in New Orleans, and I asked him about if any restaurants were for sale in Lafayette. And he said, well, I don't know if it's for sale, but George Graham, who owned Hub City Diner at the time, might be interested in selling. So I called George, and we had a couple interesting short conversations. And then George had a manager and didn't really need to get out. And so he called the deal off. And then the next day, manager gave him notice.
Oh.
He called me back. We started negotiating. And very quickly, we struck a deal. Mm-hmm. So the first day I walked into the restaurant as the owner, my deal with George is that I couldn't talk to anybody about the deal. So I walked into the restaurant. No one knew that this business had been sold. I didn't have keys. I didn't have combination to the safe.
And the manager had left. The previous manager
had
gone.
He had been gone for 2 days.
You were just taking over managing.
Right.
Which you were.
So, but I was good at it. So I knew I wasn't scared of doing it. Mm-hmm. So it was a very easy transition for me. I fired kitchen staff in about a week.
You did.
But
you knew how to make burgers.
I knew how to make burgers. I did it when I was a kid.
Yeah,
so.
This is interesting. So was it called Hub City Diner? It had that name, right?
That's right.
Just a little history. I know before it was called Stansberry's.
It was Stansberry's Cafe from 1965 to mm-hmm. 1990. And then George Graham, Charlie Goodson, and Chef Pat Mould opened it up together. And then Charlie got out shortly afterwards. The chef got out. And then George kept it for 8 years, and that's when I bought it. So.
Right, right. So you made some staff changes. Did you keep the same ambiance? I mean, does it always look like it does now?
It looks exactly like it does. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't broken, so I don't always say don't change anything. Mm-hmm. It's not broken. And probably 90% of the recipes are still Chef Pat Mull's recipes. So we have kept it true to its core. And we're not going to be a sushi restaurant tomorrow, and we don't put any flowers on the table.
It's a family diner.
We're a diner.
Yeah.
And we're a locally owned, mm-hmm. community-based diner.
You know, when our girls were little, we'd go in there, and some of the favorite things that they remember are the cars. Like you get the curly Q French fries and the chicken nuggets or whatever, and the convertible. And you know, they're now 27 and 20. So is that even still something that you offer?
Oh, absolutely. We will never get rid of those cars.
We love that.
And actually,
the curly Q fries.
And actually, I remember meeting you and John and your two little girls, and y'all were sitting at the second to last booth in the front dining room, and your girls were probably... Oh, they were little.
Mm-hmm. They were 7 years apart, but yeah, they're little. They were little.
But I remember y'all. It was after Sunday church, and I remember going to the table and introducing myself to y'all.
But that's how you are.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. It was just one of our favorites, and we live right by there. We live by the oil center, so it's just kind of a no-brainer. But we need to come back and get some curly Q fries in the car.
One thing that's been very interesting
Memories.
For me is I've been able to figure out, I can remember where somebody sat the last time they were in the restaurant. And often these people come in from Festival of Acadian mm-hmm. or Festival International, and they say, well, I know you don't remember me, but I was here last year. I said, well, yeah, I remember. You were sitting in booth 43 facing the north.
Oh, my gosh. Did they remember?
They'll remember where they were the last time. So that's been kind of interesting and shocking to people, because I do see a lot of people.
Yeah. And you know, one person you see every day almost is our friend Chris Rader.
I see Chris Rader very often.
He's what you call a regular.
Actually, he was having breakfast with me this morning.
I mean, I have to get in a dig, but I know he loves meeting people at your restaurant. It's kind of his second office.
Well, you know, the diner has become a great meeting place for mm-hmm. people, and it's all kinds of people. We have these hardcore entrepreneurs that come mm-hmm. in at 7 o'clock in the morning with their Wall Street journals and three mm-hmm. newspapers, sit by themselves, study the newspaper, study the Wall Street Journal, and then at 8 o'clock, the casual business guys start rolling in. Mm-hmm. The entrepreneurs leave. The casual guys come in, and they have meetings just like Chris. Chris has sometimes two or three meetings at the restaurant a day.
At least, yeah.
And then at 9 o'clock, this group leaves. A little older group comes in that might be close to being retired, uh-huh. and then they stay around for a very casual breakfast. And then 10-ish people come in that's only going to eat two meals a day. And, you know, it might be older
crowds. That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so we get these people who come in uh-huh. every day around 10 o'clock, and they get one of their two meals a day.
That's real. And they don't have to worry about shopping.
They don't have to worry about shopping. Yeah. And, you know, they get the good, healthy, yeah. wholesome food. And then lunch starts, and uh-huh. we start all over again.
That's interesting, because some people do just eat twice a day. That right. Popeye omelet's a good choice.
Well, we have some people, over the years, we've had people that ate all of their meals there. Like, all of their meals. Like, twice a day, 7 days a week.
Wow.
For years. Uh-huh. And then on the days that we were closed, we would deliver the food to their house.
So if they didn't show up, you must worry.
Well, yeah. They had to check out. If they were leaving town, they'd have to check out with me.
So you didn't,
so I didn't
send somebody to their
them.
House? Yeah. Send the police looking for them. That's so cool. So what, you've been in business now quite a while. Do you have tips for being a successful proprietor of a restaurant?
Well, I think in any business, it's people. And that's the only thing that's mm-hmm. important. You know, you're only as good as your last experience. And you're only as good as your weakest link. So we spend a lot of time with our staff. We have super long-term employees. My employee turnover is probably 30% of what most restaurants like me are. And so we have fewer problems because of mm-hmm. that. And so the consistency is there. And, you know, you want to make sure that every meal is similar to the last meal. You don't want to have a
right.
great experience and a poor experience. Mm-hmm. Because then all of a sudden, your only thing you remember is the poor experience.
Yeah, I remember reading online that you were, Hub City Diner was named one of the best diners. And so I know it's not easy to get that kind of recognition. What are some of the crowd favorites, you know, when people come in? What do you see people wanting over and over?
Well, we sell a lot of hamburgers, obviously, but that's across the board. But I would say hamburger steak is the most popular item, and there
comfort.
Aren't many places that still serve a good hamburger steak. Mm-hmm. And it's real dinerish. And, you know, we've not moved from the diner type food. You know, we've kept things basic,
yeah.
and we've not changed the style of the food. And people want to know what they're going to get. They don't mm-hmm. want to see big menu changes. For us, And we think that the consistency has been mm-hmm. what's driven the business.
And you also have a guardian angel, pelvis.
You know. We have pelvis in probably...
Pelican Elvis.
You're right. In probably 04, the Acadiana Arts Council mm-hmm. had a fundraiser, and it was called Pelicans on Parade. And Robert Daffert, the mural artist, called me up and said, I want to do your pelican for me.
I didn't know Robert did that.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So, and he said the name of the bird is going to be Pelvis.
So you didn't have a choice.
I said, perfect. And I knew exactly what it was going to be. And it's an iconic fixture in the restaurant, and you'd be shocked the number of people that take photographs in front of this bird daily, hourly. Mm. Everybody from out of town automatically walks in. Kids Google on him.
Well, it's just such a great place. Like if people are going to the Hyman Center for a performance or dancing recitals, I mean, you've got just so many people driving right,
you know,
there.
We're in a great location. Yeah. You know, we're in the Oil Center. We're across from Lafayette General. Mm-hmm. We're right off Pinhook.
And you've got pelvis.
And we have pelvis. And we've been around 28 years.
I know.
That's pretty important.
It's a great place. Well, I wanted to ask you, I saw that Hub City Diner had recently held a fundraiser. I know that you're super active. I mean, that's putting it lightly. You're very involved with Acadiana Animal Aid. And I know that your restaurant just put on a fundraiser and you've done so much. Would you like to discuss some of that, your involvement and I guess your employees' involvement in helping?
Well, the fundraiser, we did a fundraiser where two evenings, 100% of the sales went to Acadiana Animal Aid. And we did a adoption event in the parking lot. So we blocked off the parking lot and did an adoption event on a Sunday at lunch, mm-hmm. which is super busy and full mm-hmm. of families.
Little people.
Lots of little people. And the event ended up being very successful. We adopted out twice as many as any outside adoption event ever.
And that's saying a lot.
That's saying a lot.
Yeah.
So it was a super exciting time, and I've been working with Acadiana Animal Aid mm-hmm. for about 4 years now as a volunteer, mm-hmm. and it's an awesome organization, and I'm on the board, mm-hmm. so that's been kind of interesting for me.
I bet.
The dynamics of running a big operation like that.
Mm-hmm. For anyone that hadn't been out there, Acadiana Animal Aid is located north of I-10 in the Karen Crow area. And they've got, I don't know how many acres, Jimmy.
We have 10 acres.
10 acres. It's beautifully maintained. Upper Lafayette in the past, when I worked with them, we actually held a crawfish boil out there. And people were amazed at the beauty of the terrain because you're getting more into a little bit more hilly.
The north side, that's right.
It's just beautiful. But I know that the organization has done so much to not only raise awareness of, you know, it's heartbreaking to see these animals that are just dumped off or left to die from people that don't care, but they've really grown in effectiveness, and I'd like to have you share some of that.
Well, I always say that when an animal ends up at our shelter, it's the best day of the animal's life, and it's been proven that it's a fact of life, you know, mm-hmm. roof over their head, clean water, great food, yeah. veterinary care, shots. So Acadiana Animal Aid was formed in 1974 with four women. It was a very small operation. And they were called Lafayette Animal Aid at the mm-hmm. time. And they grew very slowly. And a Miss Weiss, who was one of the four, when she passed away, she bequeathed her the 10 acres and some funds to Acadiana Animal Aid.
Okay.
So the house that's out there now, mm-hmm. her house has been changed to the cat house. So the cats live in this house.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
And it's very cutely done on the inside. Mm-hmm. They have all these ramps and tunnels for them to mm-hmm. crawl through, and have an outside patio for them to hang out on. And then we have a full veterinary clinic. We do surgeries. We have a vet on staff. We have two certified vet techs. We have a pharmacy. We house about 100 dogs at any given time and about 70 cats. And the primary purpose, what we're supporting at this point is the No Kill 2020 initiative. And we transport, we get animals from kill shelters and we transport them to areas that are dog deficient or cat deficient. So we actually have a transport that's leaving this afternoon that's going to Colorado Springs, Colorado.
That's great. Yeah.
So we'll move about 70 animals today, and they'll be in homes very shortly when they get to Colorado.
Let's back up on that point. And I probably need to do a separate podcast at some point with the Acadiana Animal Aid people. But to me, it's appalling at the number of animals that are just dumped. And other parts of the country have different legislative priorities and I guess maybe even cultural expectations. And when you say dog deficient, that's what you're talking about. There are no rescue dogs in many parts of the country.
That's right. And so
how can we be so different? It's just, it's with the kind people that we have.
We're probably 50 years behind the curve on the law side. And it's just educating people about and having affordable and available spay neuter. That's a big problem because country people or a lot of people can't afford $150 to spay neuter your dog or cat. So,
and if you have a litter, then you've got seven to eight.
Big problem.
Yeah, big bill. Yeah.
So, the parish shelter has to accept any animal that's surrendered. And the animals that are surrendered to Acadiana Animal Aid, we accept them all. It's not our primary function. And we try to steer them toward the parish, but we do accept them all. Last year, we saved 2,700 animals. 2,000 dogs and 700 cats.
It's amazing.
That either were adopted out. Mm-hmm. 70% of those numbers were transported to dog or cat deficient areas, and 30% were adopted through the shelter.
Mm-hmm. So the dogs aren't just transported for free. I mean, this is a expensive undertaking.
It's a very expensive operation. I mean, we have a transport vehicle, and we have to pay drivers to drive to Colorado. And they drive straight through. Mm-hmm. So once we load this afternoon, they'll be in Colorado tomorrow afternoon.
Mm-hmm. So and I know from Melinda Falgu, and I don't know the new director. What is her name, please?
Janine Foucher.
She moved here from Seattle. Yeah, I know Melinda Falgu had poured herself into this for years. And just the detail that goes into once the animals take off, there are volunteers along the highway waiting to help. Well, walk the animals, and
it's an interesting process to watch how it's done. It's very meticulous, and the animals have to go through health certifications before they leave. Mm-hmm. So all the dogs and cats are tested for various things, and they're all signed off by a vet before they get on the transport.
Right. And you had told me that some areas of the country, even if they're dog deficient, there are some places that you would send certain dogs to and not others.
That's right.
So examples.
So let's say you have a husky. Well, you would want to send, we send the husky to South Florida where there are no huskies instead of sending him to Seattle where there are plenty of huskies. Mm-hmm. So the person that goes through the shelter and makes the selections of the pets does so to balance what's shipped out and relative to how many puppies versus adult dogs, and we can only send very few pit mix mixes.
Just based on what the people would probably want?
Well, most places wouldn't accept a lot of pits, pit bulls. Mm-hmm. So, but you're right, shipping the dogs based on what the area would like to have.
Uh-huh.
Puppies go very quickly. Puppies last in a shelter or adopted in a shelter in Colorado with one day, and an adult dog within 4 days.
Right. Do you have dogs at your house?
I put my dog down recently.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But my dog lived the best life ever.
Ours did too, Casper. Yeah, we had to put him down, and it was just like we knew he went straight to heaven.
So. It's very, you know, they become part of your family. Mm-hmm. And if you don't feel like they're part of your family, you probably shouldn't be a pet owner.
Yeah.
And
that's who you look for in these rescues,
absolutely.
The placements.
You know, and the Acadiana Animal Aid just started a new program for where you can do a weekend foster.
To see how the dog fits.
Well, not only see how the dog fits, but it's good for a dog to get out of a shelter, even though it's only there out for a couple of days. It reduces their stress level, and it also helps socialize them, and it begins the process of you know, going outside to use the bathroom, mm-hmm. finding where the dog bowl is. It's this, even though we have a great shelter, it's still stressful for the animal in
shelter. Well, the barking, you know, I'm sure
the barking. Yeah. But we have music piped in.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
What do they like?
It's classical music mm-hmm. is what we generally play. And we play it 24 hours a day.
Oh.
And that was one of my projects a couple years ago.
Is really?
I had read about...
I didn't realize y'all did that.
Animals yeah. like to listen to music. So a buddy of mine who's an electrician / musician, I bought the equipment and he helped me. Oh, I helped him install it. Mm-hmm. I was the helper.
Sounds like you've been a gift to Acadia and Animal
no,
Aid.
No, they've been a gift to me.
Well, I know.
They've been a gift to me.
Beautiful group. So do you think, is there any legislation maybe that could be promoted in Louisiana? Because it's bigger than just Lafayette Parish. I mean, this is a statewide issue.
It's much bigger than Lafayette Parish. And I think that it will be a while before. I think as other states bring it more on board and they have some legislation to copy, mm-hmm. I think it would be challenging to start from scratch right now.
There's no uniform state laws that... I'll look that up for you.
Yeah, they're not that strong.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, there's always uniform laws, but I guess they're for people and not necessarily for our, you know, our vulnerable
right.
animals. So, well, have I asked you what you thought I might ask? Were there any questions you were concerned I might ask?
Well, I have a lot to hide, but...
you tell me that. Googling Jimmy Guidry, I just saw some really nice things.
You know, I want to give a shout out to some guys that... have been mentors to me.
Please.
Preston Guidry, mm-hmm. Who the fellow who started Uncle Pete's. Ken Gilbo, who started The Keg. And a fellow named Carol Morton, who we call the godfather of the bar business back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then there are so many of my counterparts that are just awesome restaurateurs. Frank Randall, mm-hmm. Jim Gosson, Jack Ainsworth, Charlie Goodson, Ken Veron. And the story, they go on and on. And what's really interesting to me now is the next age group of the restaurateur. And all this renaissance, what's happening downtown now, is all these young entrepreneur restaurant mm-hmm. guys.
Yeah.
And that's been really interesting for me to watch this happen, because I was concerned that we were going to be it mm-hmm. and that the independent day was going to be gone. So I'm glad to see that there's a new group of restaurateurs out there, and they're doing an awesome job.
And they're rolling the dice. We've had Gus Resende on the show and his partners, you know, BJ Christ and the others that have opened up Central Pizza, Tula's Tacos. I know there's so many more, but
they hit 7-Eleven. Yeah. You know, they're doing well.
They are doing well.
You know, the downtown market is strong, and it's mm-hmm. It's interesting to see that they drove it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad. And I guess they're all about the same age when you were really starting out, you know, buying your restaurant and all. So, well, thank you for that. And Jimmy, we're here with Jason Sikora with Raider Solutions, and you've been making notes.
I do have notes.
And you're an animal lover. I know that's...
I am an animal lover. Yes. My dogs and cats and chickens and fish.
You know, I had heard about the chickens, by the way, because you mentioned it one time on the program.
Yes, I have mentioned my chickens, my five chickens. Though they're molting right now, and they're not laying as many eggs as they should.
No goats.
Yeah. What's that?
No goats.
No goats. Mm-hmm. We've talked about other... I'd love to get bats and bees.
Oh.
Now, bees.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bats good, too.
Yeah. We're working on it very slowly. And if you know anything about koi fish, I need to get my pleco out of my pond. I can't find them. So, first of all, thank you for being here. And yes, obviously, Chris Rader loves Hub City Diner. I think he lives there almost every single day for, several hours. It is his second office. And I've been there several times myself. I've probably met you once or twice, because you do walk around and say hi to everybody. Been there with my wife, and she loves it. There's like those Sunday mornings where it's just like, we want pancakes. Like, mm-hmm. Let's just go over there. Your food is delicious. All right, where do I start? I do like the fact that you guys play music for the animals. That's fantastic. I play a stupid morning show, zoo type thing for my animals, but I always walk around listening to it anyway, so I think it kind of gives them a sense of calm to hear the same voices every day. That's important. At Acadia Animal Aid, if I wanted to volunteer, what's the best method for me to go about it?
We have on our website, we have a volunteer application.
And what is the website?
AcadianaAnimalAid.com, I think.
Okay, yeah. All right.
We have 145 volunteers.
Wow.
And it's they're really essential to the operation of the property because there's a lot goes on every day. Just feeding 170 animals is a big deal. So the volunteers are needed, and we're welcomed.
Excellent. And I highly recommend volunteer. The volunteers that I've talked to, they love going up there. All right, working backwards. Key to your success, if you could say one thing about what really got the ball rolling so that you got to where you are now, is it starting off at Dairy Queen? Is it just what is it?
Well, it was the fellow who was my mentor when I worked for Kukos.
Oh, okay.
He was a genius, and he knew how to bring out the best in people. And it was absolutely amazing what he could do to mold people. And if you were good at something, he generally took that away from you and gave you something you weren't good at so that you would become good at that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And for me, I have a major attention problem. Like sitting here for 40 minutes has been difficult, I was the first guy to have a computer in the company. So I was the last guy he should have given a computer to, because for me to sit down and learn Excel, it was not natural for me, but I'm very good at it now. So,
yeah.
And yeah, I'd imagine you probably use Excel quite a bit. So you said 90% of your menu is still original?
Original, that's correct.
And so the other 10%, was that something that you put together or you worked with the chef? Or how does that, like the menu planning happen?
Well, I'm probably the only successful restaurateur in Lafayette that doesn't know how to cook.
Okay.
And so I rely on others.
Fair enough. Is there a menu item that you'd like to add?
Hmm.
I know you're a traditional diner, but yeah, is there something else in there that might be like...
Not the Impossible Burger or something like that.
Smoked salmon toast.
Oh, yum.
Oh, okay. I could get down with that. That'd be nice.
That does sound good.
Smoked salmon toast.
Hmm.
Okay, let's talk to your chef. And finally, where do you like to kayak?
Wow. My favorite place to kayak is on the Mississippi River.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've done some races on the river. And it's an awesome body of water to be on because it's a mile wide. Mm-hmm. And you're a drop in the bucket mm-hmm. when you're on this huge river. And the current is interesting. There's all these swirls and eddies. And so I've done some 30-mile races on the river. And it's an awesome experience.
And you stay healthy. I know that's an incredible workout, but it's... I know you've had some shoulder issues.
Right, but kayaking is really the core.
Uh-huh.
It's not so much your shoulders.
It's not your shoulders.
Right, it's your core. Uh-huh. I've had two successful shoulder surgeries, but, you know.
Not related to kayaking.
Kayaking, just related to being old.
God.
Well, I wanted to ask that. Just we have, you know, kayaks and we go out every now and then to Lake Martin or something like that. But
I paddled on the Vermilion this morning also. So I paddle on the Vermilion three or four times a week.
Wow. That's awesome. Well, thank you for being here. This has been truly enlightening. And I didn't know a lot of the stuff. So thank you for
thank
being
you.
Here. And Jen, thank you for letting me ask
thank
some questions.
Thank you, Jason. Jimmy Guidry, thank you so much for making time to be here with us, sharing your journey, what led you to Hub City Diner, and to your passion of helping animals at Acadiana Animal Aid. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. These interviews shed so much light on our community. I know Jimmy's here because of his love of Lafayette, and I want to thank you for your support as we shine the light on wonderful people in our community. And also thank you to Raider Solutions, to Iberia Bank, and Lafayette General. You can find this interview and all of our interviews on the website at discoverlafayette.net, or you can subscribe on iTunes or anywhere you get your podcast. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.